If you do not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect at any time. Again, this call is being recorded. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect at any time. If you would like to speak, you can virtually raise your hand by pressing five star on your dial pad. You will then be called upon in the order that your hand was raised. Again, that's five star on your dial pad. Please take a moment to enter your speaker code if you've not already done so. Please remember to mute your phones until speaking. Good afternoon and welcome to a duly noticed meeting for the Stakeholder Advisory Board to the Governor's Office of Emergency Relief and Recovery. The Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery was created when Governor Sununu issued Executive Order 2020-06. That order is publicly available on the Governor's website. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the Board, is open to the public, and will be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91A. We have someone on the phone taking minutes, which will be posted to the Gopher webpage. Meeting materials for the Board and the public can be found by visiting the Gopher webpage at www.gopher.nh.gov. Again, that's gopher.nh.gov. And again, today's meeting is being recorded. I will help facilitate today's meeting. Because the Board is meeting by phone on RSA 91A, there are a few initial logistics that we need before I turn it over to our chair, Donnelly Lozo. First, each of us must state our names, where we are located, and who is with us. As we move through our agenda today, each Board member and anyone else speaking is asked to identify themselves before speaking. Should you choose to take any votes today, they must be done by roll call. We will now proceed with the attendance roll call. I will begin, and again, we're going to mention your name and where you are located and who is with you. I am Joe Dorian, Deputy Director of the Gopher in the Gopher Office, 1 Eagle Square in Concord. With me, appropriately socially distanced, is
Wendy Gilman, Lisa English, Rhonda Hensley.
Thank you. We're now going to proceed with Board members. Bill Ardinger.
Yes, thank you, Joe. My name is Bill Ardinger. I am in my home office in Concord, New Hampshire. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Dean Kristen.
Good afternoon, Joe and everyone else. This is Dean Kristen. I'm at my office in Bedford, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Dean. Lisa Drabich.
Hi, this is Lisa Drabich. I am at my home office in Londonderry, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Lisa. Jim Jalbert.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jim Jalbert. I'm at my Portsmouth, New Hampshire office, and I am alone.
Thank you, Jim. Amy LaBelle. Amy, are you with us? And we see that you're on. Could you please press five star? Okay. I will come back to Amy in a moment. Al Letizio Jr.
This is Al Letizio Jr. Good afternoon, everyone. I am at my office in Windham, New Hampshire, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Al. Donnelly Lozo.
Afternoon. This is Donnelly Lozo, and I am alone in my office in Manchester.
Thank you, Donnelly. Scott Mason.
This is Scott Mason. I am at my farm office in North Stratford, New Hampshire.
Thank you, Scott. Michelle McEwen.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Michelle McEwen. I am in my office at Speer Memorial Hospital in Plymouth, and I am alone.
Thank you, Michelle. Nancy Merrill.
Hi, this is Nancy Merrill, and I am at my work office in Claremont, and I am alone.
Thank you, Nancy. Jeff Myers.
Good afternoon. I'm at my home office in Concord, New Hampshire, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Jeff. Holly Noveletsky.
Good afternoon. This is Holly Noveletsky. I am in my office in Greenland, New Hampshire, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Holly. Kathleen Reardon.
Hi, this is Kathleen Reardon. I'm in my home in New Boston, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Kathleen. Benjamin Wilcox.
Hi, this is Ben Wilcox. I am in North Conway at my office at Cranmore Mountain Resort, and I am alone in my office.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Ben. Just want to circle back. Amy, Amy Lavelle, are you on?
Can you hear me now?
We can.
Oh, it's a miracle. Amy Lavelle, I'm at my office at Lavelle Winery, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Amy. Donnelly, that completes the roll with all members in attendance. The roll call is completed, and I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Joe. Much appreciated. As everyone knows, we changed a little bit today's agenda and are not having the housing sector presentation today. And so we'll go right into item number two, which is a Gopher presentation and update. There are three different components to that. And, Joe, I'll turn it back to you so that you can manage who from Gopher is going to be presenting on each of those items. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Donnelly. And, again, we're appropriately socially distanced here at the Department of Business and Economic Affairs around a large conference room. I'd like to turn it over to Lisa English. Take it away, Lisa.
All right. So very quickly, I'm sure everyone here is well aware of Friday's announcement, where Governor Sununu announced implementing a new modified stay-at-home order, the stay-at-home 2.0, which will be in effect for the rest of May. And part of this guidance outlines steps to reopen our economy while at the same time monitoring the situation with COVID-19 and working with public health experts. That stay-at-home 2.0 talks about industries that can continue to operate with new modified guidance, and that's available on the governor's website, and that addresses public and private campgrounds, New Hampshire State Park, and manufacturing. Industries that were able to phase in services starting yesterday, Monday, May 4th, was certain healthcare services. And then industries that may begin to phase in or expand services on May 11th include retail stores, drive-in movie theaters, public and private golf courses, barbers, and hair salons. And finally, one industry to begin phasing in or expand services on May 18th are restaurants. So I think it's helpful to just keep that in mind as the board continues to evaluate the information and pivot towards what kinds of recommendations the board may want to make. Diving into additional federal guidance, I don't know what time the guidance went up. I know it was sometime before 11 o'clock last night. So we haven't had a chance to dive into it in detail, but a couple of quick highlights. One, it's 7 pages, so it's a lot more. It's an FAQ. It's not really additional guidance. It's done through frequently asked questions. It's much more expansive than it was previously. It does not answer some of the questions that have been out there. For example, it does not talk about whether or not longer-term loans can be used. In fact, the only reference to loans was in a reference to the ability for the state to provide grants or short-term loans. So there's still some question there. And they addressed a couple of real specific examples. So, for example, on page 4, there's a reference to the ability for a consumer grant program designed to prevent eviction and assist in preventing homelessness as an eligible expense. There is a couple of paragraphs about small business, talking about what kinds of expenditures or grants would be allowable there. And I think the one theme that goes throughout that the commentary on businesses is that any assistance should be tailored to assist those businesses in need of assistance. And this term of necessary costs is something that you find throughout the guidance. I think that is it for the guidance for now. We can certainly have a more robust discussion as we continue to take a look at it. And I think the last thing on our presentation or update is the lab update. So many of you may be aware, if you were listening into the Legislative Advisory Board, that board as well is starting to look more closely at pivoting towards developing recommendations for Gopher and for the governor. they're working on specific on essentially an Excel spreadsheet that outlines a number of different areas with intended uses in those areas, as well as questions or areas for further study. And so that's an ongoing process. I know that there's been discussion about possibly having a combined meeting between the two advisory boards, and I believe Donnelly may have more information than I have on that point. So unless there are questions about either the guidance or the lab update from goal perspective, I think we can toss it back to
Real fast, just for the board members, a copy of that updated guidance from Treasury was sent to your inboxes. We're going to work on getting that on the website, but that is publicly available on the Department of Treasury's website. So for members of the public, you know, if you want to take a look at those updated FAQs, we're going to work on getting that on the website. But board members, that should have reached your inboxes, and of course, with questions, you know, always feel free to reach out. But I'd like to turn it over to you, Donnelly.
Thank you, Joe. Good afternoon again, everybody. The next item on our agenda is a PowerPoint discussion template. You've all received, and it has been posted with our meeting agenda, an 8-page slide deck walking through different points that we think would be helpful in setting the table and helping us to get to some clearer direction in where we're going to go. I've asked Bill and Lisa to help out in the presenting of this PowerPoint, and what I'd ask everybody to do is hold your questions until the end, if you could. I'm going to have Joe read the roll when we complete the presentation of this, and then each person will be able to ask their questions and give their thoughts as it relates to, what's laid out here for discussion purposes. And hopefully that will help us to get through without bouncing back and forth between hand-raising as we move forward. So with that, the first page in the slide deck and the second page in the slide deck I've asked Lisa to present on. If you would, Lisa.
And Donnelly, this is Joe. Just for the members of the public, that just so everyone can have it in front of them, if you go to the website, it's under Advisory Board Presentations. And if you scroll down, you'll see today's date, May 5th, 2020, Gopher Stakeholder Advisory Board Discussion Template. So if and again, that's on our website. And if you go to Advisory Boards, the tab, Advisory Board Presentations, the drop down there, and scroll to the bottom, you'll find the May 5th, that attachment there. So it's in a PDF version for folks there. So sorry to interrupt, Lisa, just so folks could have a moment to pull it up.
Excellent. So the first slide outlines the four legislative acts that Congress has taken in response to COVID-19. And we spoke a little bit about this last week, but just to have pen to paper on this, we have the March 6, 2020 Coronavirus Preparedness and Response Supplemental Appropriations Act. That had CDC funding to states and provided for some changes to allow for social distancing, such as expanded telehealth related to Medicare. The Families First Coronavirus Response Act, which was enacted on March 18th, that established a number of things. It established tax credit for COVID-related sick leave, increased federal support, waived certain Medicare, Medicaid, and CHIP cost sharing for COVID-related treatment, and approved funding for agencies for COVID-related needs, including additional funds for SNAP, the school lunch program, WIC, and enhanced unemployment benefits. The one that we speak the most about is March 27th, the CARES Act, which is the $2.7 trillion dollar amount that has 880 pages of various financial supports, the one-time direct payments to households, forgivable loans to small businesses. There's a lot of the things that we spoke about that we'll see on the next slide. And this is where the $1.25 billion, the scope, the focus of our collective mission comes from. And then finally, the Paycheck Protection Program and Healthcare Enhancement Act from April 24th, which built on programs that were established in the CARES Act, appropriating more than $300 billion additional for the Paycheck Protection Program, as well as some additional funds for the Public Health and Social Services Emergency Fund, which is funding for healthcare providers. So going into the next slide, I promise you I am not going to read through every single aspect of these various provisions, but I think the most important thing to focus on is this highlighted provision. So it's good to understand the context so that we know where there are other sources of funds for other entities, but our focus, both Gopher and the Stakeholder Advisory Board, is this $1.25 billion that comes out of the Coronavirus Relief Fund, and that is the highlighted provision that has the $150 billion that's national, so 1.25 here in New Hampshire. And so I think going to the next slide, I'm going to kick it over to Bill.
Thank you, Lisa. On the next slide, Lisa has covered the whole universe of federal legislation and federal appropriations. Those are obviously national aggregate numbers. To us here in New Hampshire, the key question is how much of that federal aggregate money is going to get allocated to New Hampshire. And this slide four presents a listing of allocations as prepared last week by our excellent Legislative Budget Assistant Office, perhaps one of the best group of hardworking budget numbers people I know. So this is a list that shows of all of those federal bills, this is the current, as of this date, the best estimate of what each one of these programs in New Hampshire will have allocated to it. You can see the highlighted item, Coronavirus Relief Fund. That is really, as Lisa said, our scope is really directly focused on that fund, which is $1.25 billion. Our job is to create recommendations on how that money could be allocated, and we would give that recommendation to the Gopher team, who would then work with the governor. What's interesting about this is that this list does not show actual expenditures yet of these allocations. That list is still being worked on by many folks, including the team at Gopher, so that the state will have a very clear and transparent listing of, how much of this money has been expended. With respect to our $1.25 billion number, so far, I think that we've seen information come to us, to the Gopher Legislative Advisory Committee, that showed that almost $125 to $150 million for reimbursing costs of COVID response programs and state agency spending on COVID direct costs. There's a reserve on this 1.25 for that, I think, and that will be clarified as the transparent accounting goes forward. In addition, the governor yesterday at his press conference announced an allocation to cities, towns, and counties, local government, and to some first responders, at least $40 million. So with this, we see about $194 million that has been kind of reserved or identified for expenditure, and I'm sure that that number will get clarified and made more precise. The focus of our attention is on that 1.25 and how do we spend it, and I think what I do is just turn it back over to Lisa for page five for a quick reminder of our of the guidance we're receiving on what the rules are about how what we can spend, recommend, what the state can spend that money on.
Thank you, Bill. I should have deferred my update on the guidance until this exact moment, but very quickly, the CARES Act has three main provisions. The expenditures that we can use the flex funds for have to be incurred due to the public health emergency. They have to not have been accounted for in the budget, and the expenses need to be incurred during the period that begins on March 1st, 2020 and ends on December 30th, 2020. These may include expenditures that the state incurs to respond directly to the emergency, so work being done by public health, contact investigations, COVID testing. Also covered can be expenditures incurred to respond to what's called the second order effects of the emergency. That would include providing economic support to those suffering as a result of a business having to be closed, or even a business that has suffered a dramatic loss in revenue as a result of the pandemic. Couple of things that we cannot do, funds may not be used to fill shortfalls in government revenue. That has been reiterated in the latest guidance when it says these funds cannot be used, for example, for property tax payments. Expenses associated with the provision of economic support can be covered. So, for example, expenditures related to the provision of grants is something that can be covered by this. And may governments retain assets purchased with the funds? Yes, if the purchase of the asset was consistent with the limitations on the eligible use of funds provided in the CARES Act. In other words, it is one of those challenging places to draw a bright line, and the guidance hasn't entirely fleshed that out for us either. Did I miss anything, Bill?
I would just no. I think those words are directly from the actual federal Treasury guidance, and I would also note that for the first time in the new guidance that came out last night, and again, as Lisa says, everyone's got to take some time to look through it. It is said that governments may use fund payments in the case, and it says it just in the case. It doesn't limit it to it. But public or private hospitals in the form of a grant or short-term loan. That's the first term the guidance has addressed the use of short-term loans as potential qualifying expenditures.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Lisa. Do you want to add anything else, either of you?
No, ma'am.
No, thank you.
Okay. So the first five slides were designed to kind of set the table for where things are, what the different provisions were, the federal acts. As all of you know, when people call us and talk to us, or even when we're looking at some of these things, you're not certain how many times, which federal act it might fall under or which funding people are referring to. And so I think that, hopefully this is helpful in making those distinctions for all of us. Slide six is an opportunity to talk about a possible distribution process. As we have been rolling out our meetings, we have set them up in a way that we hear from different organizations, and then, as I've referred to it, we have a capstone of a broader organization that could potentially be a distribution entity, so to speak. And so if you look at this map, it again focuses on, the money that that we're talking about in our role. And then it lays out direct grants, right to state government, right to local government, as the governor did this week, hospitals, potentially others that could be a broader group that might get something direct, and then indirect grants. And how those indirect grants could go out would also include from different state agencies like DHHS, BFA, CDFA, I'm using all the acronyms, so Business Financing Authority, the Community Development Finance Authority, the Housing Finance Authority, could also local government, others, and then the non-government organizations such as the Charitable Foundation, the Regional Development Corps, you know, other groups. This is not meant to be a all-inclusive list. It's meant to demonstrate the idea of using this type of process with entities that are designed in such a way that they typically will get money out to others, whether it's grants or loans. They manage the application process, the support process, the guidance, the compliance, the review, all of those types of things in a way that I think would be hard to recreate from whole cloth and ignore some of the things that are already workable and in place. So, you know, that is kind of a process for discussion and your input. And then the last two slides, 7 and 8, are meant to be just discussion points. They certainly aren't all the discussion points, but it was just kind of a rolling train of thought about things that we might want to discuss or weigh in on. So the prioritization of recipients. How would we recommend a priority for various possible recipients? Would it be, like we talked about in the beginning, you know, based on where we are in the process, the immediate crisis, the recovery, or the, you know, what do we look like going forward? The timing of distribution. Should we be trying to match the reopening process, prioritized in such a way, you know, as Lisa said in the beginning, the reopening task force is working with the governor and making recommendations about who's going to open next. The hair salons are opening. Should we be, excuse me, looking at providing funds to them if they need it in order to open properly? Restaurants are coming up in another week or so. You know, would they be something that we would prioritize so that we were matching kind of that rollout? Doesn't mean that they'd be the only ones we'd recommend, but does that process make sense? The direct grant versus using the existing distribution entities, which is what we talked about on that map, you know, comparing the effectiveness of direct grants to ultimate recipients, using those distribution entities. A formula distribution versus a reviewed distribution, right? Is it possible to develop automatic formula for fast distribution, or should all the grant applicants be reviewed in advance for their needs up front? So could we just say, based on this formula, we're going to give you money, which there are many federal grants like that. You know, fuel assistance is a good example of something like that. So it's based on this amount of people in these areas, this amount of money is the formula that will go to Hillsborough County versus what might go to Stratford County. Prescribing the use of funds, no restrictions or limited restrictions. Would we, you know, should grants be for specific approved uses? Should recipients have full discretion on how to spend? Permanent grants versus the reconciliation of actual needs. Should there be reporting and review after the grant to evaluate whether funds are actually necessary? I mean, we want to make sure that people aren't just getting money for the sake of getting money. The impact of receipt of other relief funds from other sources, like you saw on slide 4, plus charitable contributions, plus, you know, money that's been raised through fundraising and donation receipt. Should we be looking at some of that as we determine greatest need? You know, the grants versus a forgivable loan versus a payable loan. Should we be looking at distribution as grants, loans with possible repayments, or all of the above? I mean, that's certainly possible as well. I think there's some businesses and nonprofits that are afraid to take on payable loans because they're worried about carrying more debt on their books, and what does that mean to their future? What happens to funds that are returned? If the loans are repaid, how would repaid funds be used? Should they be directed towards, you know, what the future might look at, the business resiliency, you know, the continuity of business and delivery networks? And then the last item on the page is talking about unintended consequences. You know, what unintended consequences should we watch for? I mean, I would say, you know, instead of getting all these funds out the door, lickety-split, I think we want to be very careful, you know, and no aspersions, but we certainly don't want to be in a situation of Shake Shack or the Lakers for how money went out and then people, you know, regretting that it happened and trying to get the money back. So how do we look at those things in a way that makes sense and gives fair consideration? Clearly, it's not going to be easy to make all things fair and equal and have a level playing field, but we can certainly encourage efforts in that direction. So overall, those were kind of a thought process to try to give us an opportunity to talk some of these things through. I did ask you all to be prepared and reminded you several times that we'd be calling on you for you to weigh in on this. And again, rather than, excuse me, having hands up and Joe having to watch that deck and try to do things in order, I think we'll just go with the same order as roll call, have folks weigh in, and then from there we'll decide kind of how we talk through what everybody has said. And with that, Joe, I'm going to give back to you to let's try that approach.
Thank you, Donnelly. So we're going to go down the roll call, but again, I just want to remind folks who might have joined the call, this is a duly noticed meeting of the Stakeholder Advisory Board. This call is being recorded, and we are running the meeting compliant with RSA 91A. So we will go, like Donnelly said, we're going to go down the roll call, and it's five star to speak, if you haven't already entered in. So we're going to go to Bill Ardinger alphabetically.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Donnelly, for setting this out for our group. I think what my comment is that it is very important, I believe, as one member, for our group when we contemplate what kind of recommendations we can give to Gopher for their work with the governor, is that we think about what the actual program recommendation would be. And that needs, that has a process. At the end of the process, once we know what kind of our various types of recommendations might be as a matter of form, we'll get to the process that the legislative group is already kind of starting on, where they're starting to identify amounts of money and to which recipient. In this case, I think the stakeholder board has not yet heard from very important sectors and businesses and nonprofit interests and government interests. And so it's I think it's very helpful for us to take the time to look at this and say, if we could recommend to the governor a format for how he should think about implementing and operationalizing these grants and disbursements from this fund, we would want to say things like, for example, and this is where it jumped out for me very strongly, he should try to the extent possible to use existing intermediary agencies like Housing Finance, like Department of Health and Human Services, like Business Finance Authority or CDFA, and it doesn't necessarily just have to be government agencies. It could also be non-government agencies like New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, who made a great presentation. Using those existing distribution systems, which have their own connections to many businesses, many nonprofits, many organizations, is a more efficient way to get the money out than simply direct grants, like the governor did yesterday, to local governments. That's a limited pool. I think direct grants make sense there. Perhaps even direct grants to licensed hospitals. That makes sense. But I think I wanted to just very strongly support the use of our existing intermediaries who have staff and who have capabilities of reporting, because I think reporting is going to be so important to the federal government on this. that completes my thoughts, and I thank you for doing this work.
Thank you, Bill. Proceeding alphabetically to Dean Kristen. Go ahead, Dean.
Thank you, Joe. So, Donnelly, thank you for this very thoughtful and comprehensive sort of way of thinking about the challenge that we have before us. I'll start by, I guess, agreeing with Bill that I think that it makes a lot of sense to focus on using existing infrastructure where that's possible and making recommendations to use those intermediary organizations that already are in place, that have the reporting capability, that have the networks, the structures, and sort of the experience to be able to do this responsibly and also quickly, I think, or at least as quickly as can feasibly be done. Moving from there, some of the other points you make, I think it would make a lot of sense for us as a group to take the data that we're collecting and then make recommendations that say, here are some sectors or areas where we believe it is appropriate to make some investments, because the data, the information we've received indicate that there are significant issues, challenges there that the state needs to deal with, and these resources are available to help with that. And within those sectors, perhaps to establish some priorities for areas, for the types of activities that we think ought to be given priority for funding, again, without necessarily getting into the notion of making specific recommendations about specific grants, if you will, for particular organizations or even specific industries, but making it clear that a particular sector or subsector is an area of focus, and here's some priorities, here's some concerns perhaps we have, to go to your point about things to sort of watch out for. And to do all that in a way that allows for the release of these dollars in not only an efficient way, but also expeditiously, because I think one of the concerns that people have is that there's a lot of angst, there's a lot of pain now. These resources are available. We want to distribute them as quickly as we responsibly can. So I think the idea of figuring out where our sort of primary focus points are, making some good recommendations about that, and then using really the opportunity that Gopher has working with hopefully those intermediary organizations to refine that down makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Proceeding alphabetically, Lisa Dravick. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, everyone. So I am new to this group, but I want to let you know that I have done my best to go back and listen to the audio recordings of the meetings that I was not a part of, review the minutes, and I've also spoken with Donnelly in order to try and get caught up a little bit. As far as chiming in with what I've learned so far and reviewed, I have to say I'm in agreement with both Dean and Bill in that we need to focus on a framework for recommending these sort of pass-through entities or distribution systems who already have the capability to do this and do it somewhat quickly but also responsibly, given that I don't think we want to be in the business of recommending certain amounts to certain entities, as was mentioned, I think, by Dean, but rather focusing on a priority of certain sectors. And while I would like to do it, if at all possible, in terms of the reopening, trying to tie it to the timeliness of funds where they're needed as things reopen, I don't know that would actually be possible in practical reality, given what the governor has done so far, how quickly some things are going to come online in terms of restaurants and hair salons and those sort of things. But maybe that could be included as part of a larger priority list as to sectors. As to a formula, boy, I would love to be able to come up with one, but I think that, again, is going to have to be left to the capable hands of some of these distribution entities that have already been identified. And that's all I have to add at this time. Thank you for all the work that you all have done thus far, and I'm honored to be a part of this group.
Thank you, Lisa. Proceeding alphabetically to Jim Jauber. Go ahead, Jim.
I totally agree with the first three individuals that spoke. I would expand on the intermediaries and include more state agencies. cite a specific example. There are some lesser community programs that provide transit that were not included in the FTA funding that came through out of the $158 million. I think New Hampshire got 38.7. These agencies desperately need some form of revenue or source of funding. Easter Seals, as an example, presented last week would be one of them. And the DOT already has programs in place because they administer other FTA funding that could be very helpful. The other thing is, I think that some of the framework that came out from the various funding vehicles in CARES 3 represents a good baseline for us to work with. They need to be improved upon. I think about the Main Street program and certain pieces of the PPP and also the airline program. So we could perhaps learn from that as we start having the discussion about grants versus forgivable loans versus payable loans, and finally getting back to grants versus loans, we have to be very careful that if we have viable essential businesses or essential services that are provided in the state of New Hampshire, that we try to balance what people borrow versus what they get for a grant, because they can borrow themselves out of business. And it is bothersome to me when, you know, if we get into a situation where people are getting PPP funding and then they want to come to us and they want to borrow money for supplies and things like that, they may not be in the best financial condition. And regardless of what we do for them, they may not make it after the fact. And so we want to make sure that we help people, help entities, organizations that are viable and have a real solid chance of not only getting to the other side, but becoming vibrant and becoming self-sustaining after a period of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. We're going to proceed alphabetically to Amy Lavelle. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We can.
Excellent. Thank you all for taking the time to go through this, and I'm honored to be here with all of you trying to shape this very difficult landscape. I won't repeat what I've already heard, all good thoughts, but I guess what I'm feeling is an extreme sense of urgency. Whatever we do needs to be done quickly, you know, as quickly as we can to help these folks. I'm in the event, restaurant, and winery industry, and I heard two more restaurants yesterday, friends of mine, people who have very solid, good businesses, say they threw up their hands and said, that's it, we're out, we can't do this, we're not going to make it. If relief and help doesn't come quickly, we're going to see that happening more and more, and it will forever change the landscape of the fabric of our cultural, you know, restaurant industry in New Hampshire. Small family businesses are not making it where large corporate, you know, chains will. And I strongly urge us to make the decisions we need to make quickly so that we can get the help to these folks when they need it now. And I'm not just talking about restaurants. You know, I also have a friend who told me yesterday that she's going to close her school/daycare because she doesn't have the cash to continue. This is a very difficult time for these smaller family businesses, many of whom had strong businesses before this started. It's not their fault. This is an untenable situation. And I think I would urge speed. And yes, I also think that going through existing, you know, government channels is the right thing to do. So that's my contribution for today.
Thank you, Amy. We're going to proceed alphabetically to Al Letizio Jr. Go ahead, Al.
Okay. I'm not going to repeat what was said by those before me, but I think we're all on the general same page so far from everything I'm hearing. But I'm going to concur here with Amy that I think that we do have to keep in mind that there is a sense of urgency in what we're doing, and we've been asked to do something. So we have not been asked so much to be as much visionary as I think we need to be, sort of on the strategic slash tactical, and with recommendations that are concrete and not too lofty, so they can be put into practice. So, in an effort to proceed with that urgency, I might just go a couple steps further with some specifics and throw that out there for folks' consideration. So I would agree with Bill Ardinger as well that I prefer using distribution entities to administer the application process, which I think there should be an application process for folks to obtain funding. I think using established systems and contacts of these organizations is the way to go rather than trying to reinvent the wheel. Much like you look at organizations, federal entities like the USSBA model, and they provide funds for folks to use for 504 and 7(a) loans, but they don't directly distribute them. They have a network of agencies and banks, and that whole group essentially implements the process. So in modeling that or using that as a model, I think using the distribution entities and existing distribution systems, these intermediary agencies, both government and non-government, is the way to go. Their capabilities to administer and report are it. So to get a little bit more tactical in it, I would look at us using these entities and organizations to get the word out, to advertise the availability of the funding and how to apply for it for folks who need it. I would then further suggest that we ask the distribution entity to devise maybe a simple page application, one-page application that can be sent out to our group for approval. So that could be a template that could be used for folks to concretely apply and express their need. The next step is I would suggest that we look to these distribution entities to then take in applications and process applications for folks who are in need on some type of a fixed timeline so that these are collected at the end of that period, whether it be, and I'm proposing probably a matter of weeks, couple weeks, that the distribution entity would report back to us so that we know how much is being requested. I mean, what's the universe of what the need is? Because we have a finite amount of funds. It sounds like a lot of money, but, that's somehow got to be reconciled with what the need is in a realistic way. So I would then take a look at what our board would do next in a couple steps. So I would look at another session being that our board brainstorm and devise a list of the sectors that we, the universe of what we believe the general sectors are, not specific entities or companies or organizations, but the actual sectors. Let's come up with a complete list ourselves as to what we think those sectors could be. And then I think that we do what I've seen done in many of the these community and government groups in prioritizing is that we assign each board member with 100 points, and we set up a spreadsheet, and across one axis is a list of all the sectors, and across the other axis is a list of all the board members. And we take our 100 points, and we individually apply them to the sectors that are, in our opinion, if we were to give out 100 points, where would these points be applied to by sector? We aggregate that for the whole board and see where we come up with. What is the general thought of how it adds up with everybody's equal input? And then we can come up with some rough percentages there of what we could apply to the $1.25 billion to say, X amount toward this sector, X amount toward that sector. So as we're doing that, we could then maybe compare what we have to what comes back in reality from these entities that are coming back with actual applications of needs, and then at that point do some type of a reconciliation ourselves so that we could make a recommendation to review with the governor. And I also think, and I'm going to, you know, again, a little bit more tactical in some of the things that I've heard, but I would propose that everything that is given out should be given out in the manner of forgivable loans, not meant to be a loan, but just having the capability to have accountability. So not making it impossible for somebody to have, you know, receive the money for what they need, but to just have some type of follow-up that provides a follow-up on the application like the PPP process has to show that, yes, funds were used consistently with what the need was that was expressed in the application. If in fact, some funds do get given out, would get given out and not get used that way and then turn into a loan in that strange circumstance, then I do think that there's a time period that that could get paid back. And that go into a fund that is specifically used at the governor's discretion, specifically to be allocated for aid for COVID-19. I would not be opposed to a prioritized rollout based on the most timely need, based on who's opening first, and that should be a question asked on the initial application. So I hope that's not too granular or tactical, but I do think, like Amy says, we have to really be thinking about next steps and moving the ball forward.
Thank you, Al. We're going to go to Donnelly Lozo. Donnelly, go ahead.
Thank you, Joe. I want to be careful because I feel as though I've laid all of this out for everybody, and I don't want to take up too much time. And I do think that we do have to take next steps, which is why I pivoted for today's meeting, was to say, okay, let's make sure that we're not spending week after week simply hearing from cross-sections of groups. We also need to read the responses of the people that are not verbally presenting because they have very different flavors and ideas. And we also should try to put a structure in place similar to what Al is describing in the sense of moving forward with next steps. I agree with the urgency. I know the clock is ticking. I just don't want to do it in a manner that we regret. And as much as I understand sectors and a voting system like with so many points, I'm not sure that we have the time for something quite that deep. Looking at the North American Industry Classification System, which I did a couple of weekends ago, and recognizing that they have 20 sectors and trying to figure out how all that plays, I think is very difficult. So I thought maybe some of our first recommendations would be about process. The expectation of those distribution entities were because they already had things in place to develop the application. What do we want to make sure they think about is something I think we could recommend as well, that this is important or that's important, whatever those top three or four things are. And they, of course, will probably think of things that we wouldn't think of. And part of this is because of the challenge of how our meetings have to be conducted right now and the time in which we have to do our work. The other thing that I would put on the table is support entities. So, and let me explain what I mean by that quickly. So typically, if you go to the BFA or to a bank for a business loan, you normally go in with a business plan, something that you're going to present. People are going to sit back. They're going to measure whether that's a solid plan or not, whether it needs some attention. They may send you back to tweak it, you know, that sort of thing. There are entities that are out there in our state now that help businesses determine whether their plans are sustainable and where they might be able to add or take away something that would make them more sustainable or what level of capacity they're going to build. The same is true in the nonprofit world. You go to the Charitable Foundation for a grant, they may say, hey, Donnelly, you know, that's a great idea, but it's not ready for prime time. You need to go back. We have staff that's going to help you redevelop that idea. And the same for so we've got businesses, nonprofits, which are also businesses, but then you also have children and families. and the support entities that are out there, when those doors open and we're faced with children that have been victims of horrible things that have gone on in a few months without any adults in their life, when the child care organizations need to open again and be prepared, when mental health needs to be able to support things, all those groups, those three separate areas, I think, need us to recommend supporting financially for capacity building to those support entities in those arenas that could be doing work right now so that we're not in a situation when all of this hits, you can't get all the applications through BFA or can't get them all through the charitable foundation or can't get them all through a state agency. So how do we help support so that people are putting their best foot forward, eyes wide open, real time? So that would be another thing that I would just add to the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna Lee. We're going to proceed alphabetically to Scott Mason. Go ahead, Scott.
Just a couple thoughts as I read through the list and as I listen to other people's comments. I think one of the things we need to think about as we engage agencies or other distribution systems is the cost of what these folks are going to charge for their services. And that needs to be, you know, we're not asking those questions in our questions. And if we're going to be trying to set this up, I think we need to have somewhat of an understanding of what these folks are going to need to get in order to perform some of these tasks. I do agree with the concept of trying to set funding priorities, I guess with an eye towards helping the economic system recover. And I think it's important that we, you know, there are certain things that have got to be up and running and working as the economy starts to recover. And I think probably obviously one of the biggest ones is child care systems. And it may take a little bit more help from the Gopher to get some of these programs up and running that are essential to the economy coming back to normal. And finally, my last thought is I think we need to make sure that whatever we're doing, we are encouraging the free market system to work, and we're not getting in the way of new ideas and new thoughts on how to do business under the COVID-19 conditions that will probably continue at least into the next year or two. And I would hate to think that we are encouraging folks to not to change business practices that need to be changed. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. We're going to proceed alphabetically to Michelle McEwen. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi. Thank you. Yes. I'm not going to repeat everything I've heard and agree with, other than to say that I believe proposing a structure for getting the funds out there to the governor makes a lot of sense, as does using the distribution agencies. They can provide us with an efficiency, a network, communication, education, all the different things that I've heard are really important to trying to get the funds out as soon as possible. Scott brings up a good point to make sure that, you know, there's some expectation from our group in regards to fees, if they charge fees, and of course they're going to have to staff up to do this, so they'll incur costs. I also moved to the tactical, like Al did, and I believe it should be a forgivable loan process. It should be an application. It should describe what their needs are. It should take into consideration other funding mechanisms they've already gotten, and have certain expectations around those funds. I do worry small businesses are going to borrow, and that may be the wrong decision for their long-term viability. But if it's a forgivable loan, they understand what the expectations are, it provides them that opportunity to prosper in the future. What else do I have? One of the thoughts I had, I know there's a sense of urgency, and I feel it as well. The concern I have is we really don't know. If I had to identify what our needs are for any sector, it's part of that is unknown, since we really don't know when this is going to end. When will we sort of come back to normal, and it may not be the same for everybody. And whether or not we would consider sort of two waves of financing, you know, do you set aside two-thirds of the whatever today to get out there quickly, and then maybe a second wave to identify maybe those that, the slope to return was much longer than expected, their needs are much more than they originally expected. So just to take that into consideration, I think we'd all love to be able to feel like, you know, COVID goes away, we all turn our lights back on and it's back to normal, but I just don't think that's going to be the way things are. If in the event there's a situation where the forgivable loan doesn't become forgivable, they don't meet the criteria, and loans need to get paid back, I would just love to be able to see New Hampshire reinvest in public health, whether that's vaccinating our residents or doing something to try to prevent something like this from happening again in the future. So other than that, everything else I have is sort of repetitive, so I won't go any further, but thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Proceeding alphabetically, we're going to go to Nancy Merrill. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi. I as well don't want to be repetitive. I'm in agreement really with the rest of the group so far in terms of using the existing systems we've got in place. They're ready once funding is available. They are ready to move those funds out. They don't have to really set anything up. I think that just following up on the last comments, I also see at least two waves in this, and I know that funds need to be sort of out the door by the end of the year, but we've got immediate, which Amy mentioned, we've got places that have been without revenue now for 8 weeks. So, you know, they're already into this for a couple of months, so they're if we want our main streets back in any sort of condition, there is an immediate need. But there also is a recovery period, and for some, especially in hospitality, it's going to be a period of time. And I think we are going to see a second wave of need sort of come in June and July when some of the federal recovery program funds run out, like the PPP. So anyway, I get a little concerned about formulas that are just sort of based on population because I don't know that they really reflect need. So I would be a little concerned about that. I think an application process of some type, easy and quick, that would ensure that funds were really being distributed to small and large throughout the state where the need exists. Is great. And in terms of Donnelly's comments on, you know, the business incubators, the SBDC and those around the state that are working to help small businesses retool, rethink business plans, really important right now. So I would love to see them somehow get into the mix of this. I think that's all I've got.
Thank you, Nancy. We're going to proceed alphabetically. Jeff Myers, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. First off, Donnelly, thank you for pulling together this presentation and coordinating with others to do so. I think it's very helpful in framing up a lot of the issues. I've got a few thoughts. First, I think it's going to be essential that our recommendations reflect the abilities of both our governmental partners and our non-governmental partners across the state to be able to push this money out through a process. I can tell you from my own personal experience as Commissioner of Health and Human Services for 4 years that it's not easy to spend money quickly and do it in a thoughtful in an effective manner. You can always just push money out, but you've got to be able to do so in an efficient way, in a purposeful way, as I'm sure you all appreciate. And, you know, one of the questions that I don't think is fully answered yet is, what is this December 31st, 2020 deadline mean in terms of our distribution of these funds? Does it mean that if we give money to HHS, for example, or to the BFA, for example, or to one of the nonprofit organizations that would put money out, is the distribution or the allocation of funds to that organization, is that the only thing that has to be done by the 31st of this year, or does the money actually have to be spent? And I've had a lot of personal experience with spending the state's money, as most of you know, and it doesn't happen overnight. And so there's a sense of urgency not only to respond to the crisis that we're in, but there should be a sense of urgency in quickly coming to an agreed upon methodology and process for putting the money out so that we know it will go out and we're not risking, in the absence of any other guidance to the contrary, that we ensure that it is able to be spent fully by the end of the year so that it does address the needs that are out there. Secondly, I think it's incumbent upon us to come up with a methodology. Lisa English said at the beginning of the meeting today that we are focused on the $1.25 billion. And I agree with that. We are focused on how we will allocate through various means $1.25 billion. But on the other hand, that can't be done in a vacuum. There are, as slides 3 and 4 and the presentation kind of referred to, there's a lot of money, other money that's come into New Hampshire that does not address all needs. I'm not suggesting that at all, but certainly starts to address needs in many sectors. And I think that those funds have to be taken into account in deciding how to utilize the $1.25 billion. We want this, in my view, we should be attempting to prioritize the 1.25 for needs that may not have been able to be addressed yet through other funding and coordinated with other funding. And it's called the coordination of benefits is how I think about it. So as we prioritize how this money should be spent, we need to take into account everything that's come into the state, everyone who's had access to some funds, so that that can be taken into account in our recommendations. And to that point, I would just add very quickly, I think it's on slide 4, I know LBA has done a good job of pulling this together as of the 29th, but I can tell you that last Friday, another $115 million was allocated to the state through the Rural Hospital Program under the CARES Act. So that money is not on that list. There's also a very significant claims reimbursement program that's been authorized by HHS. So they will be using CARES Act funds from the initial $100 billion that was allocated to CARES to reimburse providers who tested or treated COVID patients who are uninsured. And there's no cap on the total amount of that program right now. It's estimated that HHS will spend through HRSA, the Health Resources Agency part of HHS, that they'll spend somewhere between $10 and $20 billion. So there'll be a very significant amount of those funds that will come into New Hampshire as well. And there's maybe some ways of estimating what that impact may be. That program just started. There's no funding that's been released yet. Those claims reimbursements are being applied for now, and the funding will start being dispersed, I think, around the middle of this month. So I think we need a sense of urgency in our work. I think we need an agreed-upon methodology that takes into account all of the money that's come into the state. As I said at the outset, I think we have to rely heavily on both our governmental partners and on our nonprofit and private sector partners in order to kind of get this money out effectively. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. We're going to go next alphabetically to Holly Novoletsky. Holly, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I like the distribution process framework that's been laid out. I would suggest that in looking at all the submissions that we've had, there seems to be a division of requests for larger amounts of capital versus very small amounts. Some organizations are looking for very minimal amount, and trying to break down the channels that they access that money into maybe those that are looking for larger amounts and smaller amounts, so that you'd have, looking at the distribution framework that's presented, you still have the direct grants to the state, local hospitals, but under the indirect grants, still using the government and NGOs, breaking that down even further to the nonprofits that are looking for less than $50,000 and those looking for greater than $50,000, and maybe streamlining those processes in each of those areas. And then, again, on the for-profit side, there are the businesses that are looking for small amounts of money, less than $50,000 and more than $50,000. But then also separating out the homeowners and renters who are just looking to make the mortgages and payments, and making them not have to go through the same process. That I also agree with the idea of a forgivable loan, as these are public dollars and we need to have some accountability for them. And there is truly going to be a second wave of sequelae from this, and I think we need to make sure that there is some money there for the long term with mental health and the hospitality, as somebody else had mentioned. But mental health, I think, is going to be a big issue. And lastly, looking at priorities, daycare, the loss of daycare became a triggering event for unemployment. And I think if we don't address daycare, it's going to be hard to get different sectors up and running, because that's still going to be an issue. I think that needs to be a priority. And that's it for now.
Thank you, Holly. Again, we're going to proceed alphabetically. And next is Kathleen Reardon. Kathleen, the floor is yours.
Hi, thank you. I agree with a fair amount of what has been said, particularly around using existing intermediaries or infrastructure, whether that's nonprofit or for-profit folks. I think within that, we've already heard a few areas that would be a priority, like we heard from the Business Finance Authority and the Hampshire Charitable Foundation and CDFA, who partner together. So I might suggest, as we think about our work and the process and priorities, that we might think about who those intermediaries are and their audiences or their sectors that we prioritize, and really think about making those recommendations soon, because even though they've had very good proposals, as folks have suggested, if there's an application process, you know, there is a little bit of time for them to pull that together from a capacity standpoint. I do think that those intermediary groups bring a level of experience that can be helpful to ensure that funds are used and in a prudent manner, and I think that that's really important. From a forgivable loan versus grant, I would strongly suggest that nonprofits really need grants, and that if our concern is around accountability, there are a lot of ways to have accountability, and that that can be done in the application reporting process, and that is something that those intermediary groups are very skilled at. And even when we heard from Business Finance Authority, they have a lot of experience with making sure that federal funds are used in the manner that is appropriate. So there may be even grants that would be appropriate on the business side of things as well. I think those are my major points for now. Again, many of my thoughts have been kind of covered by other members as well.
Thank you, Kathleen. Proceeding alphabetically to Benjamin Wilcox. Ben, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
All right. Well, thank you. And thanks to everybody for your input, because I can't agree more with the perspectives that have been shared so far. Really, the intermediary groups is exactly where I was going when I reviewed all of the submitted questions and process testimony that's been put forth. And it really I almost got into the exercise of connecting them with those intermediary groups when I read a lot of the one-off organizations seeking money. So I think to reiterate that point is critical. I'm glad the part of the loan process came up where we can gain some definition on that, because the forgiveness aspect of that I think is really important. And the other term used, urgency, I'm really thrilled with everybody, Donnelly, your leadership, and everybody from the Gopher office moving that topic up to the fact that how can we get these funds out effectively? I know when I spoke with our local RDC group, I was really pleased to hear they'd already initiated a number of loans for small businesses. And they were basically saying, we're having requests for more and we need more funds to keep everybody in business. And I'm really thrilled being in my community, knowing that some of those small business loans have kept businesses open so that when things do open up, they'll be ready to open and welcome customers, which is really important. I was also extremely touched by New Hampshire Charitable Foundation and the CDFA's presentation, because we have over 100 nonprofits right here in our little mountain town. And when you add that to all the applications I saw through the state, again, what a great intermediary group to really use them as the oversight. And I think Al mentioned creating a process with them. So I picture that being a layer for our group. If we could refine the process and then identify a number of these intermediary groups to work with, then we're sort of casting our net so much broader, and then also quicker. And I think speed and urgency is critical at this time. So I really like this approach, and I hope we can refine those things so that we can address all the important sectors through the intermediary groups and take it from there. I know there's a lot of needy hospitality aspect, and I'm right in the middle of the hospitality business who are looking for that support. And again, the question is, how quickly can we do that? And thank you. Appreciate all the efforts so far.
Thank you, Ben. Donnelly, that concludes the conversation roll call, I guess we can call it. And I want to kick back over to you.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, everybody. I know that we're all trying to find a way to get to the goal line, right? And I appreciate everybody's thoughts. And as I said, the format of our meeting isn't always easy for that. It seems to me, based on the conversation, that maybe the next step is that I think we're all on board with the idea of this process, as was proposed in slide six, including just reminding folks that this was by no means meant to be an all-inclusive group. There are certainly many other groups that could fall in this category. But I think that it sounds like we are poised to make our first recommendation, and it's about process. And I think we'll, you know, maybe similar to what we did with the draft questions, draft up some language about what that recommendation would look like. If somebody would want to make a motion that this is the process that we'd recommend and give us an opportunity to draft language to get back to everybody, that might be helpful to move that one forward. I'm just waiting in case a hand goes up.
Seconded.
I think Jim moved, and I think that was either Holly or Amy that seconded.
Holly.
Thank you, Holly. Is there further discussion about that?
And again, 5-star on your dial pad. 5-star on your dial pad.
Okay, great. Seeing no further discussion, Joe, would you be willing to call the roll?
Absolutely. This will be a roll call, and I'll proceed alphabetically through the roll. Bill Ardinger.
Yes.
Dean Kristen.
Yes.
Lisa Dravick.
Yes.
Jim Jalbert.
Yes.
Amy LaBelle.
Yes.
Al Letizio Jr.
Yes.
Donnelly Lozo.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Michelle McEwen.
Yes.
Nancy Merrill.
Yes.
Jeff Myers.
Yes.
Holly Noveletsky.
Yes.
Kathleen Reardon.
Yes.
Ben Wilcox.
Yes.
Donnelly, that completes the roll call with all members unanimously saying yes.
Great. Thank you so much, everybody. Much appreciated. It's one ball we can move out onto the court and put it in play. So I appreciate that very much. Now, as was alluded to previously, the Legislative Advisory Board, they are starting to make concrete recommendations by certain sectors. They're even putting dollar amounts in some of it. I would imagine that many of you are like me and do not have the opportunity to Monday, Wednesday, and Friday listen to the legislative meetings, which is why I've added having the Legislative Advisory Board update on our agenda. I have spoken with Senator Morse, who chairs that group, to ask that they do the same on their agenda, have a standing item on their agenda to update their membership on what our group is doing. And also, we have discussed having an opportunity, and I've mentioned it in the past, to have a period of time where we might have a joint discussion. It looks like the senator is looking at having that on Friday. There was some talk about having it tomorrow, but I think Friday giving us an opportunity to make sure that we have a few points that people can think about for discussion purposes for Friday, and I think that will help us. I don't think we have to reinvent the wheel on how we move forward, and that's clear based on, you know, this first recommendation that we're making, but I do think that we do have to be aware of, as Jeff said, not only the money that's going out, you know, because we're not in our own silo, different pots of money have come in for different purposes, but also what other groups are recommending, whether it's the reopening group, the legislative group, the governor himself on certain areas. That will inform our work and help us to be able to pivot and move with things as we move forward. In that vein, you also see that on our agenda, I would like to have a standing item that we discuss recommendations on each of our agendas. So if something is coming up and we think we can move forward, I want to be able to do that. I don't know if anybody wants to weigh in on some of that, but I think taking the information from our discussion today coming back to the group with some thoughts for how to put this on Thursday's agenda for further recommendations, whether it's sectors, whether it's, you know, voting in a way, whether it's the things that may have no other sources of funds that have come in. The discussion around childcare, I think, is a critical one. There, prior to COVID, there was a significant amount of work that was happening in the state around, it's called the whole family approach, whole family approach to jobs initiatives, parents working, children thriving, and it is a really collaborative group with both the federal level, the state level. That includes the Administration for Children and Families. It includes the National Conference of State Legislators, the National Governors Association, our own Health and Human Services group led by Chris Tappan, Department of Education group participating, led by Christine Brennan as the deputy director. There's work around the cliff effect for benefits for people. All of these wonderful initiatives were starting and gelling around really raising the conversation about quality child care, what it takes to be able to be a successful employee or employer. In January, the governor created a Council for Thriving Children, which is made up of people including parents and families. On Friday, there was a presentation from Associate Commissioner Tappan and Deputy Commissioner Brennan before the Legislative Advisory Group. I will send that PowerPoint around because I think this group would benefit from seeing it and seeing the work that's already happening there and the funds that have already been identified and the same type of phasing conversation that we're having in our group is also taking place among the Child Care Collaborative Group, the Emergency Child Care Collaborative and Program Group, a lot of different groups saying, okay, how do we make sure that when we're opening our doors, the child cares are opening their doors and able to help. Not just the ones that are closed, but the ones that are opening now serving essential workers, kind of a balance across. And how do we make sure we don't lose any ground because we didn't have enough of it covered to begin with? So I think that that it would also be something helpful for people to take a look at. I know there's an enormous amount of information to receive and take in and digest, including the responses we've received. So we've received almost 70 responses to date, a fair amount of letters as well, somewhere around 30 letters that have come in that we've accepted. Ginny Lupi at the New Hampshire Council for the Arts has also had put up a Google Doc where she's taking in just an incredible amount of arts groups that are sending in their thoughts and comments. I sent that out on our last packet of information, close the business packet. So looking at some of that stuff, I think, will be very helpful as well. Would anybody else like to weigh in under other business beside myself?
Donnelly, this is Bill. I raised my hand, but it might not have come up. Joe, is it okay? Or are you going to, behind other people?
No other hand to raise. Go ahead, Bill.
Donnelly, I just want to thank you for raising the issues that I know in your professional life you work on as part of your responsibilities at your agency. Child safety, child health, child education, child nutrition, child care. I can't imagine that there is a more important priority, and I fear that children will bear some of the greatest harms from this COVID crisis, and I just hope that you will continue to take the lead to get this group and get Gopher and the governor and the legislative branch the information they need to create an appropriate program that really builds and strengthens the safety net at this time. So you hit a nerve with me that is just spot on, pitch perfect, and I thank you for raising it.
Thanks, Bill. You're welcome. I mean, I think all of us, I tell people all the time, all of us in our personal lives know that if your home's not in order, how can you concentrate on your work? And keeping your home in order is quality care or schooling, education for your kids. And for families that don't have the tools to be able to support their children the way they'd like to, we have an obligation as a community to help. So. But there's a lot of great work being done, so I don't want this group to think we're alone on this. Anybody else want to add anything under other business?
And it's just as a reminder, 5-star to raise your hand, 5-star.
Okay, with that, I would like to thank Dean Kristen for being willing to pivot along with all of his folks that he had set up for our next meeting, which was the housing sector for today. That has been now scheduled for Thursday. I think there was a little confusion on the way I did item I laid out item B under number 5 on our agenda. Some people thought that the next group of presenters on Thursday would include healthcare, hospitality, tourism, and agriculture. That was not my intent. It should have said discussion about the next group of presenters. I have asked Michelle to put together a cross-section on healthcare for us. And Scott Mason is diligently working on putting together an agriculture day. And I think we can talk a little bit more on Thursday about what would hospitality tourism look like and any other sectors that we want to make sure we hear from. So with that, anybody have anything under either of those items that they would like to raise? Okay. Well, I would suggest that because we have ended our meeting early, because people have been very thoughtful in how they've participated today, let's pretend that we're still meeting for the next half hour. And for those of you that are still trying to get through reading all of our responses, now would be a great time. There are many of them that have some very interesting approaches to things that we could think about a little bit differently. It will also help us determine who haven't we heard from that we'd like to make sure we hear from. So unless somebody has anything else they'd like to add in these last couple of minutes, I'll give it 30 seconds, I know, for hand raising.
Donna Lee?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I keep trying to raise my hand. It doesn't seem to be working. It's Holly.
Hi,
I have
Holly.
A quick question. There are going to be employees who can't go back to work because they've lost their employment, the businesses have closed. Will there be money in this 1.25 for retraining?
That's a great question. I would imagine that we can make recommendations that way. I would also say, as one of the things that my agency runs, the Workforce Investment Opportunity Act program in partnership with the state, the Bureau of Economic, Joe, help me, Bureau of Economic, I want to say, support.
So it's the Department of Business and Economic Affairs and the Office of Workforce Opportunity.
Exactly. Rolls right off the tongue, but sounds
I
much
know,
better
right?
than Fred. We run it through a grant from them, and part of that program includes a program called Dislocated Workers, which applies like right now and has for a very, very long time. When an entity closes, the state rolls up their sleeves, gets in there, and starts working with the organization. They're required to tell us, tell us, meaning the state, when and if they are closing and how it's going to roll out in order to get in there and help those employees find employment. You know, as you've heard mentioned through this, you know, we went into this with the lowest unemployment in history, and we were really having some success working with people that ordinarily might not be considered for employment being really reached out to in a way that hadn't happened as deeply, because employers were also very interested instead of just the entities working with them like the state and my organization and many others. Employers were saying, you know, we want to work with people, we want to take chances, we want to look at that. So there are existing networks in place to look at what that might be, and I do think that they may recommend things that either our group or the legislative advisory group should recommend, although Commissioner Caswell is, you know, on the reopening task force, and I'm certain that he has made suggestions from his agency quite a bit on what it might look like when that happens, Holly.
Okay.
Thank you.
I feel this is going to be a large need, and we need
I would agree.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Excuse me, Donnelly. We had some technical difficulties with the system. We have a few hands raised, but to Holly's point, the Treasury guidance on the FAQ page, page 4, starts talking a little bit about that. I don't want to speak for Nancy, our general counsel, but there is some information there if you want to take a peek on the document that I sent on the updated FAQs for Treasury guidance. So, and Donnelly, right. Our apologies here. There seems to be some serious delay with the system. We have a hand raised from Michelle. Go ahead, Michelle.
Actually, I raised my hand back when we were making the motion.
Well,
so a very serious delay. thank you,
so
Michelle. Anybody else, Joe?
I think we have a hand raised from Jim Jalbert.
The same.
Okay.
I believe we have a hand raised from Bill Ardinger.
I'm all set. I spoke. Thank you.
So, Joe, any of my response to Holly's question, based on what you've seen that I've not yet reviewed, anything inaccurate in what I said that should be corrected? Because I'm fine with being corrected.
Donnelly, I think you summed it up quite well. I think.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure I didn't have any blatant errors.
I would never contradict the chair on the call.
Oh yeah, well, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I'm chairing the group. I'm not like the expert. Anyway,
this is Bill Ardinger. I'll jump in and correct the chair when necessary too.
Now you're the only one that shouldn't, seeing you put me in this place. But I would welcome it as well, Bill. No problem. Okay, anybody else? All right. With that, I am serious. The last 20 minutes would be a wonderful use of looking through those responses for folks. You can still pretend we're meeting. All right. With that, thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. I think we've had a very productive meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Donnelly. Right. Great job. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, this concludes a duly noticed meeting for the Stakeholder Advisory Board to the Governor's Office of Emergency Relief and Recovery. This call has been recorded and was run in a manner compliant with RSA 91A, noting that the time is 2:39 p.m. We will end the recording. Have a great afternoon.